Good afternoon, Wisconsin, and welcome to WFHR's Playmakers. Hope y'all are having a great start to your Monday out there, your Monday afternoon. Got your host right now, James, and I am joined by the one and only Randy Paul.
Good afternoon, James. Hi, everyone.
Good to have you with us, Randy. Thanks so much for being here. Randy and I are going to have some fun today. We'll take some calls a little bit later, get in some other news, of course. We've got plenty to talk about with MLB, NCAA basketball, men's and women's, all of that coming up. But right now we have in with us a champion. A champion, everybody. We don't get to say that often around here, so we're going to take advantage of it when we can. We have in with us right now assistant head coach of the Assumption Girls Division 5 champions. We have with us Paul Jagielinski. Paul, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to go ahead and join you guys.
The most important question I'm going to ask, Paul, did I get the last name right?
It's like Smith, only different. So Jagielinski is pretty close. I think I'm going to give you credit for it. You get a thumbs up.
All right. You know, that's a good coach right there. That's a really good coach. I appreciate that, and appreciate you being here, man. Thanks so much for the time. My first real question for you is, and I'll kind of get out of the way here and let Randy have the lane, because that's what you do when you have a good point guard. You get out of the way, let him do his thing. Has it set in? Has the win set in yet?
It's a great question, and I think the answer is it still feels like a little bit of a fairy tale. Having a chance to win a state title with this group of girls where you get a chance to coach your own daughter. That plays a critical role is for my family, which is a basketball family. We watch a lot of hoops at our household. Is truly a dream come true. So, you know, I can see where the spot in the gym where the banner is going to hang. I think that'll officially make it, official. But you know, they haven't taken the gold ball away. And every time I pinch myself, I still wake up. So it's one of those deals where it's definitely starting to feel real, but it still is a pretty great feeling.
You know what I always think is a kind of a fairy tale ending, and the same kind of feeling is when you get home after the state championship, because it's the first game of championship Saturday, and you get home that afternoon or that evening, and you turn on that TV and go, we were there, and that was us.
Absolutely.
Doesn't that make it seem kind of almost surreal?
Absolutely, especially when you take a look at, I was watching the D2 game, which of course was a terrific battle with Tulsa going to, I think, two or three overtimes beating Madison Edgewood, and then they had that long break in between there, so they recapped it. So you get a chance to recap before the Division I game, and you get a chance to see yourself and the girls on TV, and it's less than 12 hours ago, and you're like, wow. It just really feels surreal across the way, so that is pretty fun to watch.
And what a season, too, right? I mean, you ended on, if I counted correctly, a 19-game winning streak as you went, 21 straight, if I remember right now. 21 straight, and you were 29-1 on the year, 16-0 in conference. That's unheard of.
Yeah, the 29-1 I can vouch for. You told me there'd be no math, so I don't know what the last number of games there was. I think as part of that season, you get the program's first ever win at Neillsville. Ranked in Division IV, that's a monster win for the program. You go to Aquinas and you beat them at Aquinas. That's Coach Donarski and the Aquinas Blue Golds are the gold standard in the state in terms of where it goes. Samantha Davis, obviously the sister of Johnny Davis, the Badger great, is on the team. I think we held her to 30. So, as Charlie Nelson would say, or as Coach Nelson would say, we got the win, so that's all that really matters. But I think that's their third total loss at home in the last 10 years. So some of the accomplishments along the way are pretty fantastic. I think the conference winning streak is... it's been 2+ years since we've lost a game in conference. So, I mean, I think that's got to be above 30. The accomplishments of this particular team are pretty fantastic. I think if I heard the stat right... they lost 10 total games. That group of seniors lost 10 total games throughout all of high school.
And over 100 wins, if I remember
right. That's correct. That rivals what the numbers of Pewaukee has. This particular group of seniors has got a silver ball and a gold ball, so a runner-up and a state championship. Pewaukee has got two silvers and a gold. I don't know that it gets the coverage maybe statewide that it does, but it's probably one of the most accomplished groups in one of the most accomplished programs, and that state offers. It's a pretty amazing, pretty amazing run the girls just completed.
Before we get into like the state championship, the tournament, semis, and the finals, let's take a look back and kind of eliminate the two games you talked about already. Can you think of any other game that just kind of pops in your mind that you say, you know, that one just kind of sticks out above all the rest? And I know there's four of them we've already mentioned, but anything else that comes to mind?
I think anytime you can get a win at Stratford, that was big. Stratford at the time we played them was undefeated, so it really gave us undefeated in conference anyway. So it gave us a stranglehold on conference. And if you remember right, at the end of the first half of the Stratford game, I think we shot it four times in the last 41 seconds. And we ended up going ahead and giving up a basket, a three-pointer from half court. And we picked up a foul on Anna Schooley going into it at the halftime. And we had a discussion with the girls. I'm not sure they would call it a discussion, but we had a one-sided discussion with the girls about how you end the half makes a tremendous difference. So with this particular group, they were blessed to be as athletic as they were, but you have a bunch of multi-sport athletes. Anna Schooley has been an all-state volleyball player, a all-state softball player. Obviously, Sarah and Addie have been to state in tennis, have been state soccer players. I think Sarah leads the state in goals, and Addie obviously takes a look at it. They don't necessarily play basketball year-round, so sometimes the athleticism trumps the basketball on-court IQ, if you will.
Yeah.
And that Stratford game was a real moment for us, which is, ladies, if we really want to win some of these close games, fast forward, beat Barneveld 34-30, you have to play basketball the way it's meant to be played at the end of those ball games. And that was a real turning point for us. You know, it's a lesson that we were fortunate to learn in a win. But that was a real moment where I think the light bulb really went on for the girls that took a look at was the case. And I think the other moment was the first time we played Pacelli, we did not play Pacelli at our best. We weren't really healthy.
We had illness, right?
Yep. Jordan, there was a lot of sickness going through the school. Jordan was questionable whether or not she was going to play. Sarah was questionable whether or not she was going to play. Credit to Pacelli for coming in and getting a win. But if you think about the end of the Pacelli game, we were up 6 points with three and a half minutes to go and lost in overtime. And that's another one of those moments where, you know, hey, it's great to be athletic and build the lead. You got to be able to keep it. And that's, I think, a real turning point for the coaching staff, for the girls, for everybody to be able to kind of say, okay, we're on the cusp where we can play with anybody. But being able to finish these games has got to be a starting point. And it trickled over to how we finished practice. It trickled over to how we approached the games, to how we talked to the girls. And quite frankly, I think it trickled over to their attitudes where they kind of went from, well, we can just blow everybody out, which is a lot of fun, by the way, to, boy, sometimes you got to play close games. And when you play these close games, we've got to make the right plays to be able to win them.
You know, it's kind of fun to look at the scores, too. And before we get to the state championship game itself, you had games of 62, 61, 61, 61 points. I mean, the offense was just really flying high at that point. And at the end of the season, that's something, of course, that you're hoping you're going to be at that stage.
Yeah. So for us, the number one thing that I've always tried to coach or that I've always tried to be associated with is tempo. Every team is a little bit different. Sometimes you have to slow them down, keep it in front. Sometimes you want to take a look at it. But when we were at our best, we were able to score 35 to 45 points and a half. And we were able to really jump on a lot of teams early. We were up at Phillips, who won the North this year. It was 54-6 at the half, I think. You know, honestly, we put up 37 on Aquinas at Aquinas. So I think that was 37-20 down there. So for us, tempo really made a difference because when we could get into that 65-plus point range, we felt really confident that defensively we weren't going to give that up and it was going to be hard to play with us. It probably what makes beating Barneveld so special kind of just for me is that this team has not won a tremendous amount of games 34-30. Typically, the formula for us when we've gotten beat with this group, it's been in the mid-40s. It's been kind of a grinded out. It's been a physical battle. We were talking a little bit off air about Edgar 2 years ago when we had blown them out twice during the regular season, and then they got to that sectional game, and they got real physical with us, and they drug us into the 40s, and we just didn't respond well. So I think the way that we were able to respond against Barneveld in that state championship game was it's something that I'm probably more proud of the girls of than what they'll ever realize. It just really shows a lot of growth.
You know, one of the things that we have not talked about was when I was looking, and you compare scores, that's you know how that can go. But Oshkosh Lords took care of in the state semifinals. They were victorious over
Albany.
Yes, Albany. Who was the team that had won the state championship the year before? They were like number one and two with you guys all year, back and forth a little bit, but they only had the one loss. And Albany twice, I think, had beaten Barneville by double digits. And Lourdes has defeated them by double digits. So you're thinking, Lourdes is going to win this game. Were you at all thinking that, or did you have a different perspective on it?
Oh, that's a great question. I'll tell you this. I had game planned, and I had a scouting report built for Albany, Oshkosh Lourdes, Barneveld, Owen Withy, and Eau Claire Emanuel Lutheran. So I do a lot of our film and a lot of the scouting, so I watched a lot of what I would consider to be rough high school basketball games, trying to get ready for that particular moment. You know, the Six Rivers, I think it's Six Rivers, don't quote me.
Six Rivers East.
Conference is really tough because Argyle-Pecatonica is the smallest D4 school, and they got bumped when Albany came down to Division 5. Argyle-Pecatonica has got, for those of you that followed UW-Green Bay, the Butler girl, Bailey Butler, was Miss Wisconsin and was their point guard. Kylie Butler, who was an AAU teammate of Jordan's this past year, plays for Argyle-Pecatonica. And Wellnitz is another very common name kind of in that area. So those two ladies really carried Argyle all year long, and they ended up getting beat in a sectional D4 semifinal, maybe final, one of the two. They made a pretty deep run as well. So that conference really beat each other up, is kind of what I'm saying. Albany Albany beat Barneville twice. Barneville beat Argyle twice. Argyle beat what have you. Yeah. In through there, Blackhawk, who is a thorn in our paw from the old Newman days, nemesis, came up and handed a loss to maybe Argyle or Barneville or somebody in there as well. It was a little bit perplexing. Actually, I think about it, was Albany. I think it was 48-44 as I think about it now. So that conference was really tough down there. So I think the good news is that they were very battle-tested. The bad news is that I think that, you know, sometimes when you beat on each other all year long, you got a little bit beat up. And I think that's what happened to Albany in that game. Albany's got a really nice ball player. I'm sure everybody remembers Abby Hollis. She, 2 years ago, hit the big deep three at state. She was like 2 for 17 in that game. And it's just not something you ever see Hollis, you know, shoot at. She's one of the three-point shootout contest members. So I think that zone and the length of Oshkosh Lourdes got to them there, whereas Durst was able to handle that zone and length. And it was great. Like, we as a coaching staff, we were fortunate to play the first game, so we had a chance to watch the second one live. And to this day, I have nothing but respect for Haley Bauer from Lourdes. I think that she, one of the best scorers, if not one of the best shooters in the state, any division, in my opinion. She didn't get it going until late. Izzy, who was also a teammate from Barneville, the Jordans in AAU, was 6 for 8 from three. That's not something you always get in the game. I think she was 2 for 7 against us. That's more kind of how I expect her to shoot in terms of where it goes. So it was, I think, a really loaded field this year. I think all the way, even in the once that you got to that final eight, I think any of those eight teams that got there, well, really any of the six. That Northwest sectional was probably a step below, if we're being honest. But somebody has to come out of it. And again, I thought Owen was a wonderful opponent. I'm not taking anything away from it. But I think any of those remaining six teams on any given tournament and any given day could have beaten one another kind of coming through. So I wasn't necessarily surprised to see Barneville get the win. But it was the way that game played out was a lot of fun to watch.
You know, Izzy, you guys did a nice job on her, right? As you said, she went 6 for 8 in that semifinal game, and you guys held her down to making what she ended up with. I'm trying to remember. She had 8 in the first half, maybe 4-6 in the second. I think she had 14, if I remember correctly. Somewhere around there, right?
She had less than 13, because I know Jordan was the game's leading scorer, and she had 13. So the real key with Izzy is a borderline Division I, definitely Division II ball player. She's very left-hand dominated, and you know, we talked a lot about it in film when we went through it. Letting her go left, she's unstoppable. I don't know if you remember, she took about two dribbles and threw that ball with her left hand the entire length of the floor, hit the girl in stride for the layup, and I went, like,
yeah. What are you going
to
do?
What are you going to do with that? Like, I mean, it's just impressive across the way. But she's a very different ball player when you can force her right than forcing her left, even from a scoring standpoint. And I thought that, for the most part, the ladies did a really nice job of getting locked in on that. That was primarily Addie Vollert and then Larry Sanzarosa really were the two that were matched up on her and continued to force her to the right hand. And I thought both of them did a really outstanding job in the ball game. It was one of the keys to victory. And when you can keep her to 10, 12, 14, whatever points she had, it's how you keep them to 30, is she's about half their offense.
Yeah, the other thing, you know, we talked about was, you know, the importance of going into halftime kind of on a run. Sometimes people talk about the 4 minutes before and the 4 minutes after the halftimes, or whether it's football or whether it's basketball. You guys came out really strong in the start of the second half, and I think you scored the first 5 points to kind of jump out a little bit there.
Yeah, you know, we try to talk a lot about one of the sayings that I take a look at it is I'm old enough to remember when Mike Tyson fights were really a big thing, right? And when that first bell would ring and he'd come running out at you, if you survived the first round against Tyson, like the rest of the fight was really different, but you had to get through that first round. I think it wasn't, didn't you have a saying, like, everyone's got a plan until you get hit?
Right. Yeah, so, exactly. So, my favorite quotes.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, again, Iron Mike, you got to love it, right? So, by the way, this group of girls is so young, they have no idea who they are. Like, it's one of those deals. Yeah. I have a whole bunch of quotes, including from Step Brothers, one of my favorite movies, and they're looking at me like, Coach, what are you talking about? Like, it's very disappointing.
Mike Tyson, the guy from The Hangover?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The guy with the face tattoo. Like,
yeah. That's him, yeah.
He occasionally boxed and won it. At some point, a little bit as well. But, you know, so we talked a lot about trying to go ahead and deliver the first punch, try to get out on teams early, just simply based on the fact that once we get a lead on you, we're tough the way that we pressure the ball to make a run against. But, you know, if we fall behind, it can be a little bit different because then you make that big run and you just get yourself back to even. So one of the things we talked about at the half is we did not shoot it particularly well in the first half. And, you know, I remember saying to the girls, actually, and Ryan reinforced it, like, we walked in with a big smile. I think the girls were a little, I think it was 18-16, and they were kind of thinking it was close. And we all kind of walked in as a coaching staff, and we just smiled, and we're like, hey, we are in really excellent shape. This ball is going to fall, and when the balls start to fall, we're going to be able to make a run. Now, we weren't counting on Jordan breaking her thumb and some of the foul troubles and whatever that we had across the way. But, yeah, it we felt pretty good about it.
What is it about a coach? Because as somebody who I eat, sleep, and breathe basketball, I love this sport, have my whole life. But I can watch somebody like John Starks in a finals game and feel like, well, he's got it today. I'm watching him in warm-ups. He seems good. And then he goes out there and goes 2-for-10 or something like that. And as a fan, I'm watching, and I just see a guy who's doing the same thing I've seen him do a ton of times when he's 8-for-10. As a coach, what is it about you that feels confident that, okay, the ball's not falling in the first half, but it will in the second? Is it form? Is it attitude? What is it that you see that makes you feel confident they're going to pull this out?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, I'll go twofold. First of all, I think we were getting a lot of quality looks. That rush center floor has got multiple three-point lines, and, you know, unfortunately, the high school line was a tannish color, and the college line is a big black stripe, and everybody kind of gets what have you. So we shot a lot of deep threes. So we continue to try to reinforce to the ladies about pushing them in. But personally, and I hope it doesn't come across any other way than how it's meant to sound, we were getting Jordan a lot of really good looks. She's a 43% three-point shooter for her career. I can personally attest, because I'm a rebounding machine, of the amount of hours and time that she put in. It was one of those deals which is, if we could continue to get her quality looks, if we could continue to get Larry quality looks, if we could continue to get Addie and Sarah and Anna quality looks, really even Claire Nelson down the stretch, if we could get them quality looks, we felt really confident that in the work and the time that they've invested, they were going to be able to knock them down. And fortunately for us, we did. When we needed to do, we started to make the shots.
You know, a couple of big things in that game towards the second half, especially, you know, your daughter gets hurt, she hurts her thumb, and then she pours in 3 three-pointers, right? And down the stretch, you're under a minute to go, and you hit 4 big free throws that put it at least at 3 points, and then the next one made it four. So it made it two possessions. We'll talk a little bit about those.
We were at Aquinas. I apologize for going back to that game, but I think it was such an important moment. And we were up 37-20 at the half. They actually came out and made a huge run. I can't remember if they actually took the lead or what have you, but down the stretch, it was a two-point ball game. And I think if you talk to Sarah Shaw, she'll say that probably was not her best ball game, at least offensively, that she had. That being stated, she got fouled, and with, I don't know, 3-4 seconds left on the clock, came down and just hit two massive free throws that secured that victory for us at Aquinas. And I thought, boy, that's a confidence moment. So when you can send a senior like Addie Vollard or a senior like Sarah Shaw, or you can feel confident, hey, that ball can go in the Claire or Jordan or Anna's hands, it's a different, you know, it's just a different level of confidence when you take a look at it. You've seen them do it in practice. You've seen them kind of walk up with a little bit of a confidence, a look of determination, which is, hey, today's the day we're going to get it done in terms of where it goes. So it really was nice to be able to go ahead and watch them contribute and finish the way that they did. Like, yeah. I said, it's just a... just a real prideful moment for a coach.
You know, Coach, I cannot thank you enough for the time. We've gone into overtime here. We kept you a little longer than expected, but I appreciate you putting up with our questions and hanging out with us today. I did want to wrap up a little bit with one thing in particular, because you've been doing this for a while, and you've been in a couple of locations. I imagine you appreciate those locations, enjoyed yourself, had great memories, but what is it that's special about playing here for this team in this area?
Yeah, so I appreciate the opportunity to end with this. So I just want to take an opportunity to thank the Wisconsin Rapids and specifically the Assumption community. You know, again, we're blessed to be able to have multiple media coverages where we have terrific broadcast partners like Randy, like Steve Maves, that are able to come over and provide coverage and treat our girls like rock stars. It's outstanding. The fan support, you know, I was kind of sharing, you know, you look up in the crowds, and no matter where we went, whether it was at Wapaka, at Adams Friendship, you know, in a game where we played Pacelli, where it felt like it was 2-1 and our fans were loud, our boys were so into it. The basketball community at Assumption, especially for, I think you can see it at the Classic for the boys team as well, but you don't always get that passion for girls basketball. I think if we're being honest, sometimes it's a matter of people get more passionate about the boys game. So I think to have the community just come out and support the way that they do is, it's pretty special. It's special for the girls, it's special for the fans, it's special for the team, and it really makes it a collective us championship. Even when we won it, one of the best things is we had a chance to go back to the Ridges, and the entire community was there. It was not the case. I mean, shout out to Wood County and the City of Rapids and the police and fire department. The escort that we got out of town and in town was phenomenal. Charlie Nelson got a chance to live the dream. He got a chance to drive in the SWAT vehicle and makes a great picture. But I just, the community itself is so fantastic, from the school to the fans to the media partners to the coverage. It really makes Assumption and the experience such a special place. So thank you very much for that, including the opportunity to come and talk about it. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
There's a catch, though. You did too good. You were too good. You got to come back. Now you're going to have to come back. Had you phoned it in, it might not be the case, but you were too good. It was too much fun talking with you, Coach. So maybe before the next season, we can bring you in to preview the next season a little bit or something like that, because I'd like to make a thing of this and have you in a little bit more. It's been too much fun talking with you.
Yeah, it'd be great. Would love to be able to go in and continue to support you guys in the way that you support us. And again, we can maybe send a player or two over or take a look at it in Crossway. I'd love to be able to go ahead and stick around. And said you guys are going to talk about Major League Baseball and the Final Four across the way. My personal picks tonight would be I'd like TCU to upset Texas, which I think is really, I'm happy for Haley across the way. Yeah. And even without Juju, I think USC is going to give UConn a great ball game. So that's what we'll be watching in our house. So right, it'll exactly. be good.
Right on, yes. Oh, man, it's going to be so good. Especially with Paige healthy. I'm very excited to see what Connecticut can do, but I'm with you on the USC thing. Those are good picks, Coach. Thanks for being here, and I appreciate the time. And again, congratulations to you, the team, everybody involved with the Assumption program.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Take care.
We'll be back with more Playmakers right here, proudly brought to you by Quality Plus Printing and Family Natural Foods at WFHR, locally grown radio.
Welcome back, everybody. Playmakers here on a Monday afternoon. Hope you're having a good one out there. James and Randy here with you. We want to send a gigantic thank you to assistant head coach of the champion Assumption Lady Royals and Coach Paul Jedlinski joining us there. That was great to talk with Coach.
Yeah.
He's going to be back. Whether he knows it or not, he's definitely good enough. He's going to be back.
He's penciled in.
Looking forward to that. We've got a couple of things that we have to get to. Randy, we want to get to some local stuff. Real quick, I did want to mention just two things. One, it just broke across the wire. Jackson Profar will not be eligible for the playoffs if Braves qualify after testing positive for HCG. So one of the big free agent pieces for the Atlanta Braves is already out for at least 80 games and will not be eligible for the postseason.
Wow.
As the Braves have had such a star-crossed couple of decades, really, with their stars and having these amazing teams and pulling off one World Series or something like that. I wanted to get in real quick, and I think it's a good lead into Randy's local coverage. Our stat of the show today is 3. It is just the number 3, but it is a strong number when you consider that Assumption Royals, we just got done celebrating their third title in team history.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Cool. Pretty noteworthy as well, and only building on a legacy that's beginning or has been going on over at Assumption with the Lady Royals.
Yeah, they actually won in 15. All right, 13, 16, and then they won during the COVID year over in La Crosse.
Right. So they got more than 3.
It's four. Yeah, plus WISA.
So I was afraid of this because I couldn't find an exact place to find the stat.
You know why? Probably because of that COVID that was over in La Crosse.
Okay.
It's been 3 at the Resch Center.
Right.
There
right.
you go.
This is, but it's definitely been 4 total. I thought it was 4. I thought that was more correct.
Yep.
But either way, they've been building on something around here. And, you know, I don't know if people get a chance to take a step back very often, but I think being a transplant gives me some insight and some advantage sometimes to things because I'm close to this and I care about this and I am a homer. I wholeheartedly own that. But I also have a little bit of distance because I haven't been here as long as some others. And I respect that. And I try to respect that as best as I can and appreciate it. And I don't know many communities in our area here that can hold up the champions that they do, whether we're talking about Lincoln Wrestling or you're talking about the Assumption Lady Royals or some of these other things, swimming when I was in school and how big swimming was and how many wins we had there. I'm sure that if you go up and down the state, there's high schools and bigger cities and areas that really stand out and they've got just, you know, a wall full of championships or whatever. I'm not trying to overstate things or be a prisoner of the moment, but I do want us to be able to take a step back and just appreciate what goes into all of this. And I mean wins and losses. I'm talking certainly coaches like that we just talked to and players that we get to talk to. But how about, you know, the parents that bring these kids to practices, the refs that take the time out to do these things, the training staffs to keep these kids healthy or in a situation in a championship game where a kid gets hurt and bandage them up and get them back out there. There's so much that goes into winning. There's so much that takes place, and I don't think that any of us, including myself, ever get a chance to truly appreciate all of it. Here we had a nice moment that we were able to talk with, not only about that, but I think really taking in the beat and just, hey, this doesn't happen every day. Let's enjoy this.
You talk about going to state tournaments. It's funny because I was just talking to the radio announcer from Barneveld, and he was there from 13 through 16 just as I was and hadn't seen him since then, just had a great conversation and said, you know, just being a part-time guy, that's all I am. I just do some part-time sports, and the championship, you know, state tournaments that I've been at, some people have never been to a one. They broadcasted their entire careers. That's their career to do sports. They've done none with their community. I have done Lincoln hockey. I've done Lincoln football, and I've done Lincoln basketball. I have done Assumption basketball. I've done Assumption boys and girls basketball. I've done Assumption soccer. I have done Nakusa baseball. I probably have missing some of that. Can you imagine? It just boggles my mind.
It's a weird thing to be both admire somebody and respect somebody while also being incredibly jealous of them. It's a weird place you put me in here, Randy. It really is, but I love you for it. I love that you went down the list there because I also wanted to take some time to appreciate you and Michael, our board operators, and the people that bring these games out there. And certainly not just us, but anybody else out there. I know it's not, you know, we're not supposed to
you know, tip our hat to other medias or other radio stations or anything like that up and down the state. I appreciate anybody that's covering high school sports. We're all on the same page there. We're all trying to do the same thing here and promote these kids, these sports, and fun and enjoy it.
I am glad you brought that up because, you know, when we go do these games and sometimes you've got competing radio stations, those announcers will bring stats to me and say, I know you probably didn't have time to look this all up, but if you could use this on the air, here you go. And you're just like, it's like a brotherhood, right? And they just look out for each other. And, you know, can you tell me your starting lineups? Can you tell me anything about, you know, and you go back and forth on it. Is anybody injured? Is there anything I should know? And they'll share it with you, you know, because they know it makes better radio, and we do the same with them. And then you talk about the sponsors, too, that allow us to bring those games to our listeners, because without them, guess what? We aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, we're nowhere. No, we're nowhere without our sponsors. Yeah. So we really appreciate
there's
them.
It's just such a big community that it takes, just like Coach was talking about, the community of Assumption. I wish people could have seen the number of people at those games. Starting down at Adams Friendship was, you know, that was just a packed house. Like he said, the boys were just great over there. Wapaka was just like I was going back there in 15, you know, when they had that great run, too. That was an awesome venue. And even at State this year, it even seemed like this year at State, there was a bigger contingent than ever been there before, and I think that went throughout the entire tournament. So I love going to Green Bay because you just take 41, you hit Lombardi Avenue, and you are there. You
right
don't
there.
Go through one-way streets. You're not winding around. It's perfect.
It's funny. I was just talking to somebody who would travel up to Green Bay. We're talking about that, you know, had some other local stuff for us, Randy. What do you got?
Well, last week, Thursday on WIRI, the Lincoln Girls softball squad swept a doubleheader from Eau Claire North, winning the first contest 7-6. It only took 13 innings, and then doubling up. That's all. And then they doubled up the Huskies 6-3 in the nightcap. Kudos to Michael Comer and Chuck Gennaro. You talk about people, right? Well, there you go.
Yep.
5.5-hour broadcast for that doubleheader.
That's incredible.
So, great job, guys.
Chuck hasn't done a game in ages, and that's the game he gets. That's it.
Last time we'll see Chuck.
Appreciate you, Chuck. Yeah, he's still rest. He's still on the DL.
Yeah, he's just kidding, bud. So here's the next game for each of our area teams. Of course, this is only weather permitting, so it's all up to the weather. But if everything holds true, here's what it's going to be. For the girls in softball, Wisconsin Rapids will be at home a week from tomorrow. Not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow, Tuesday, April 8th against Wausau East. Assumption's first game will be on Friday as they host Adams Friendship in a doubleheader. Port Edwards is scheduled to head over to Pacelli today. And Nakusa's game with Neillsville Granton for today was canceled. They'll hopefully play at home on Thursday against Athens. For the boys, Wisconsin Rapids will head over to Appleton East tomorrow afternoon. Assumption's also on the road tomorrow at Adams Friendship. Same for Port Edwards, as they will be at New Lisbon tomorrow. And like the Nakusa girls, the Nakusa boys will entertain Athens on Thursday. So again, you might want to check with your schools and things to make sure those games are on, because it sounds like there might be some weather moving in tomorrow night, and that could affect the fields. So that's just what the schedule says for now.
It's kind of funny how it works as we get into these spring, summer sports, and we're not sure if they can play or not or anything like that, because I get so excited about them, then rain out, you know, or something like that. So I have this thing with expectations in life where I'm really tried to be a lot better about it, but with sports, I'm horrible. I'm just horrible with it in sports.
Yeah, Thursday, you know, I got that beautiful day for the doubleheader.
Yeah.
And then Saturday night, you got ice storm.
Thank you for the coverage, Randy. It's just ice storm just waiting for us there. It's interesting. It's been an interesting start to the MLB season. You know, I want to go there with things next. We certainly want to talk some March Madness with you as well, Randy, before we wrap up today, both on the men's and women's side. But with the start of MLB, it's still one of the biggest games in town, if not the biggest, when it does take the stage. I think that there's a lot of talk about what is the, you know, America's pastime and some of that. We talked about this last week on Playmakers, the surveys, the studies, the man on the side of the on the street that they talk to, baseball is still, they consider baseball still America's favorite pastime. So with all that, there's a lot that goes into opening day, and a lot of pressure that goes into opening day expectations, a lot of these things. I don't say this very often, but I actually think that throughout the season, it's going to really come into favor that I am a Chicago White Sox fan. In part because I know how bad baseball can be. I know the devastation of this game. I talked about it with Seth the other day. He mentioned the quote, the famous quote of baseball's heartbreaking and all that. I know that better than most. Not saying I know it better than anybody, just saying I know it better than most. And that's in the last couple of years, in the last couple of seasons, if not my lifetime as a Southsider. And you could say, well, James, you've got an 05 World Series. You've got nothing to complain about. And you are 100% right. 100% right. I got to see my team win a World Series. Not just win a World Series, sweep World Series. I couldn't have been more excited. It's still, I'm just thinking about it. I'm getting goosebumps. If Mark Burley walked into this room right now and asked for a kidney, I'd ask left or right. So I'm not at all trying to sound like I'm complaining. I'm more so coming to this from because I know the highs. And I know the lows. And I know what it is to have an owner who cares more about his basketball team than his baseball team. And once he got the baseball win, that's all. Then he's done. He's done. He's going to sign Ken Griffey Jr. at 38 to a five-year deal. Like, that's the kind of owner I have and everything. And with that, I have an owner that dismisses the fan base almost every season. An owner who believes that you guys owe me. You guys should be paying me. I shouldn't be paying you. You know, you should be thinking, you should be kissing my feet a little between the Bulls and the White Sox. This guy thinks he should be royalty and treats the fan base that way. Say what you will about the Milwaukee Brewers not spending enough money or some of the other complaints. I've never heard one Brewer fan complain about the way the team treats the fans. And I believe the respect that is given to the fan base. And that all being said, that's why it was a little disappointing in the offseason. And I'm not talking about Coach. I'm not talking about Pat Murphy. Because there is nothing. I don't know what's in Pat Murphy's head or heart, but I feel like we do. I feel like we do. I don't feel like that's a guy that puts on airs. I don't care what the front office or the commissioner is telling him what to say. Pat Murphy's going to be Pat Murphy. I feel pretty confident about that. But the when the fan base is screaming at the front office, please do this. Please sign this. Please sign anybody. And the front office is telling the fan base, we don't think we're good enough, basically. And we're not going to fight to be good enough. You know, we're not going to go and make moves. We're not going to try to be competitive in free agency or anything like that. And they continue to tell the fans, we hear you, but we're okay. And then the season starts like this for the Brewers. Like, Don't lie to the fan base. An organization that has been so good, I think, at being honest with the fans and being real with the fans, as much as ownership ever is. It's a smack in the face to have the fan base seeing what they... You don't lie to them. Don't tell them that they got all-stars in the starting lineup here, and I mean in the rotation, when they don't. Don't tell them that they've got all the pitching they could possibly need when they don't. Like, in injuries this, injuries that. You got a plan for that. You're a professional organization. Anybody can get hurt on any day. So what is the one common thing in all of sports? Next man up. So don't tell me that you're okay when even the fans can tell you. And I say even the fans because we love this game, but we don't know. We're not paid to cover the game or paid to scout like these guys are. So they're supposed to know it better than us. But even the fans can tell this is what was going to happen. This team is not built to hang with some of these other teams. Now, it's early in the season. Bats got to literally warm up, not just with the weather, but you know, getting used to pitching, getting used to all of this again. I'm sure that we can make some conversation about the bats that New York was using and the torpedo bat, and we'll talk about that and everything. But at the end of the day, they beat you. That's what matters. And this is a good team. This is a team that could win a World Series, even with the Dodgers being what they are. I genuinely believe that if you were active in free agency.
Do you think part of it goes to the fact that, you know, it goes all the way back to the days of maybe when they signed CC Sabathia, and then he was a free agent, just they had him like on loan for a couple of months, and they offered him like as much money as they possibly could, and then they just got outbid by the Yankees, and he was gone. And the same thing now you'd happen with Willie Adames. Part of the problem is if they had a solid salary cap like they do in the NFL, that would keep things a little more equitable. These teams like Houston, the Yankees, the Dodgers, they don't care if they exceed the salary cap because it's a luxury tax. Mm-hmm. Who cares? They got all the money in the world. If they would impose that kind of luxury tax on the Brewers, they couldn't afford it. And so part of the problem is they don't have the source of revenue that those other teams have. But you're right. I mean, today they got beat in their home opener 11-1, so they've lost four straight. And, you know, how long is it going to be until people are going to come out and say, Pat Murphy, who was the manager of the year last year, maybe we should get rid of him?
Yeah, right? You're going to lose. Yeah, in that scenario, you lose a great manager because of the front office.
Yeah,
because they're not doing their job. Their job is to spend money. I agree with you. There is no comparison to what the Milwaukee Brewers make on a yearly basis to what the Yankees, the Dodgers, even the Padres or something like that do, or the Mets, for that matter. At the same time, this is not a mom-and-pop shop. This is not a tiny team. You are part of Major League Baseball. You are getting siphoned from other teams. You have a bank account that is bigger than most of us will ever see. I understand the argument, and I'm not mad at you, or I'm not frustrated with you, Randy, but I'm frustrated is when millionaires tell me they got no money. When millionaires are telling me, I'm sorry, I can't spend anymore. Then what? Then somebody else should be in that job. Then sell the team. Sell the team to a hedge fund. Do something. But don't just sit there and tell me, you know, this is a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. Winning's fun. Winning is a lot of fun. And that's what the job is. The job is not to go out there and entertain. The job is not to go out there and make sure that everybody has fun watching the sausage races. The job is to win a World Series. And if that isn't your goal, then let somebody else in. Let the next man up. It's frustrating to me when I see such a strong fan base. And I will admit, a good portion of my family are Brewer fans and grew up, they grew up with the Brewers and everything. So I take this a little bit personal in that regard. But at the same time, I'm bringing this up for another reason. In a couple of months, it's football season. And I see a huge parallel between the Packers and the Brewers, and the same conversation when the fan base yells at the ownership, hey, we could use a number one receiver. Hey, we could use a great defensive lineman or a good linebacker. We could use a world beater on defense. Oh, you know, we just don't have the money. I'm sorry. We just can't really afford that. Well, okay. Then are you going to lower ticket prices? You're going to charge a little less? You're going to charge a little less for your TV deals? You're going to do any of that? Because that's business. That's what business is.
And I think that's where the cap comes in with the football. You know, they absolutely cannot exceed it, whereas in baseball, they do it. They just have to pay for it. And that brings up an interesting point. Now, I was thinking of that as you were saying that. Do you think that part of it is maybe that, and I'm not just saying with the Brewers, but any team, that, you know, it's kind of fun to own a team, right? You know, mm-hmm. It makes you kind of maybe even famous, you know, and so you spend the money on it, and you, of course, don't become a millionaire by losing money. Right?
Yep.
And so they want to make sure that they have a product that they are going to be making money on. And so there you got that fine line, right? I love being an owner, right?
Yeah.
And it makes me, you know, it's an important position to be an owner of a sporting franchise. And so then again, you're stuck in that ground where do I spend myself so I lose money? I don't want to do that either. Well, then don't be an owner. Well, yep. But I like being an owner.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where, to me, you know, I don't know if this has ever even existed in the idea of ownership. But I'll say this is one of the reasons why when I do look at what Green Bay is and their ownership situation, it does give you a little bit of hope because of the uniqueness of the Green Bay Packer ownership. Because you would love to see an owner that is a fan of the team already. You would love to see an owner that cares as much about winning as the fans do. But 9 times out of 10, Alex Rodriguez didn't grow up a Minnesota Timberwolves fan. It's just the only team he could afford. It's the only team for sale. He wants to own a professional sports team, so that's where he goes. Mark Cuban wants to own a sports team. He can't get into baseball. The baseball owners won't take him. So he looks at basketball. Who's open? Okay, oh, the Dallas Mavericks are for sale? I'll buy that. That's how it usually works. And if that's the approach, then that's what you're going to get. And you're, if you're fortunate, you come from a good market, or you land in the draft, that unicorn, or something like that, and you're the Milwaukee Bucks, and you have a title a couple of years ago, thanks to Giannis and some of the front office moves and some of that. You have that wonderful combination of that. But you don't get there easy, and you don't get there without listening to the fans. I'm not saying the fans always know right. My God, I'm not encouraging the brass in Philadelphia to listen to that fan base. But it goes a lot farther than I think ownership is willing to admit. And I think being honest about your team goes a lot farther than ownership would admit. I did want to compliment not only the Milwaukee Brewers, but Major League Baseball. I've seen just nothing but great tributes to Bob Uecker, up and down, not just with the Brewers, but with a lot of other franchises. Going back to spring training, that's been appreciative. That's been very cool to see.
Yeah, I think when Cap hit that opening home run for the Brewers, then they did the Bob Uecker call on the home run. That was kind of cool.
Outside the press box entrance was a banner with the message, "We'll miss you, Bob," that included thank you notes from fans who had signed it after Uecker's passing. There's so many tributes that are going on, too, that we haven't gotten to see, that are just going on with the players or player to player. Christian Yelich was talking about how a lot of former players in Milwaukee or just players from other teams that never even played Milwaukee are asking how they're doing. You know, and I just like the humanness of this. I like that every once in a while, as crazy as this sport can be, competitive business, all those things, we're still just human beings. And we miss the ones we love, and we want to honor them. And I hope the Brewers are able to do that this season. I think they will turn it around. I wouldn't bet against them.
I think what's really cool, too, is, you know, how the players took to Bob, you know, the announcer, right? Because they never saw him as a player, obviously, and that's all they knew him for. And, you know, it kind of, in a small sense, kind of reminds me of what we do here, right? Because we become part of, like, the Assumption family, the Lincoln family, the Nakusa, or the Port Edwards family as well. And to take us in, the announcers, like that, that's just, it's always so special to me.
It's a humble honor, and we appreciate it. We'll be right back to wrap up Playmakers here on WFHR. Welcome back, everyone. Playmakers here at WFHR. Big thank you to Quality Plus Printing and Family Natural Foods sponsoring the show. Got about 5 minutes left of time, which is not nearly enough time to talk torpedoes or tush push or any of these things. But I did want to get to something, Randy. And I don't do this often enough. What do you want to talk about? Any of these sound interesting to you? Anything in particular that you want to get
voting,
to?
I think they're voting on the tush push tomorrow.
Yeah,
from what
yeah.
I understand. Mm-hmm. So that will prove to be interesting.
I
was just going to say the number one seeds, all four, making the final four. That's only the second time, I believe, I heard in history. Going back to, here's a number I'm trying to remember, 2008 maybe was the only other time it happened. So that should make for a fun final four Saturday.
Yes,
And championship game. And Duke with Cooper Flagg and Conknipple from our own Wisconsin here. Mm-hmm. So that has a local interest as well. So, and then tonight, of course, you've got USC going against UConn, both of them missing one of their top players, of course.
Yeah.
So that's going to make for an interesting battle. It's just a fun time of year with that basketball going on. It's still continuing from our gradual letdown from what happened at State a couple weeks ago with the girls.
It's been fun to kind of keep that basketball momentum going and enjoying some of the NBA, I'll say, but not as much as I have been in college basketball, men's and women's side. Both been a lot of fun. And with the way the games have been, it seems like every night there's great college basketball on the men's or the women's side. I'm excited about this UConn game tonight, in part when you see players like Paige Beckers in these moments, the way they step up. It's a shame about Juju, but I don't know if she's going to go into the NBA. WNBA draft or not, but we might have another year of her and stuff. But I will say Paige Becker's declared, and
is
that's
she
the
out
number
too?
One pick.
She might be out too.
Oh, is she?
I think her and Juju are both out tonight.
Oh, I didn't realize. I missed that.
I think I saw that.
Regardless, Paige Becker's did declare for the draft, so there's your number one pick. That is going to be interesting. And you're right about the tush push with the time sensitivity of that. By Wednesday's Playmakers, they will have made a decision.
Right.
So I want to touch on that a little bit, no pun intended.
How do you feel about that? Are you for the tush push or against it?
I'm of two minds. I will say overall I'm against it. I am a child that grew up with a family that, hey, if you don't like us beating you, stop us. You know, if you don't like the team running up the score, well, just stop them. It's as simple as that. And it does feel a little bit like that with this situation. Like all of the NFL is angry that Philly is better at this play than we are and blah, blah, blah. I don't feel like that applies to the situation because this situation is essentially, in my opinion, and the way that the game of football is played, it's cheating. Like, you're not allowed to push the guy. That's against the rules. It always was. Going back to intramurals, going back to flag football, you couldn't do these things. So why are they getting away with it in the NFL? I understand some rules have changed over the years. And they obviously, if it was illegal, they wouldn't be able to do it in the NFL and all that. I also don't think that you can – I don't like when leagues talk out of both sides of their mouth. And they talk so much about player safety, and we care about that and everything. And then you see a play that even somebody who's never watched a game of football before in their life, if that's the first play they see, what do you think of the logic is of them letting their child play that game? Or that that's a healthy play? That everybody, all parties coming out of that game are going to be perfectly fine. The problem is they don't have the stats that they want yet right. to get rid of the play. And they can't get rid of it until they do. So I think they got at least one more year of this. And we'll see how it goes next year. We'll see where things go with it and everything. I will say the one quick thing that I do want to say about it that I wish was being talked about is that Philly did this right. Philly built their team right. They built this team since you were a kid, since I was a kid, that we were taught the way to win in football. Build from the trenches. Build from the line and build up. Offensive linemen should have quarterback contracts. Like, it should be valued. And I would like to see teams, instead of saying, hey, I don't like that, change it. Hey, we should do that. Hey, we should build up our offensive line. We should build up our defensive line. We'll get to the other positions. But let's start there. I'd like to see like the actual focus go where it should, and not how can we stop this, but how can we do this?
Did the Bears do that this offseason? Did they add some quality linemen?
I believe so.
I think I heard that.
We'll see. But they were very active in free agency because, again, all of this is on paper. The Bears have won off seasons plenty of times, sure. and they're still finishing in the lottery. You know, they're still finishing in the top of the draft. But I will say that's the encouragement we have right now in Chicago is that this guy gets that. This guy is coming from that, and he understands I could have the greatest quarterback of all time, and it doesn't matter if I can't block for him. I just saw it in the Super Bowl twice with Patrick Mahomes. The teams that are paying attention to that are the teams that I would bet on. Great conversation today with Coach Paul. I want to send a big thank you out to him. I just realized we have a couple of Coach Pauls stop by with us.
That's pretty good. Blessed.
We have the market cornered on Coach Pauls. Thank you, Coach Randy. No, Randy, we appreciate you. Thanks for being here, man. And have a great night, everybody.